Welcome one and all once again to Duel Wields in episode 72. It's been like a month since we actually had a numbered episode, so that's always good. Joining us this week, we have Daniel.
Hello.
And we have Martin.
Hi.
So we were just discussing about how this summer is going to be fun-filled with news and new releases. So this should be an interesting 2.5 months going forward. But starting here, we haven't really actually talked about what we've been saying for like a month. So who wants to kick us off?
I can.
Go for it.
Played a couple of things. First thing, I guess, is because I bought the Humble Bundle, I played some Limbo, finally.
Amazing, spectacular, fantastical.
Gameplay field adventure.
It's pretty cool. It's decent. I don't know. It's alright for the $8 I spent for the whole bundle.
Yeah, but isn't it like 10 or 15 bucks on its own?
No,
yeah,
the Humble,
you're talking about Limbo.
No, it's part of a Humble Bundle.
No, I'm talking about, because this is like a 2-year-old game. I'm talking about when it first came out, isn't it?
It was 15, I guess, on the 360, yeah.
Okay, because, yeah, I haven't played it, but one of the things I heard is, it was one of those games that kind of gets this reputation for being this amazing experience.
It's supposed to be pretty short, so that's why people, I think, freak out about the price point.
Yeah, and I think, price and, value is two different things at times, but I think the other thing is a lot of people kind of complain that it's trial-by-error gaming, where it's, a lot of the traps and stuff you kind of die to it already, so you know it's okay.
I don't know, I'm having fun with it. I think it checkpoints very frequently, so it's not really that big of a deal. It's kind of trying stuff out and see.
The biggest problem I have with Limbo is like the VVVVVV is also trial by error, but in VVVVVV you get a real sense of satisfaction because you will error over and over and over and over, and it's like a really cool soundtrack, and you've got this really interesting sort of platforming overworld going on, whereas with Limbo. You try it once, okay, I'll jump here, and then you jump, and then you're done. That's it. Whereas the VVVVVV actually requires some sort of skill and reflexes when it comes to its platforming, because it's got the whole gravity shifting mechanic. That's the problem I have with Limbo. And other than that, there's just not much to Limbo, and I think it's one of the most overrated games ever, because it's supposed to be this super fantastic experience when he just has a good art style, and that is it. Yeah, it doesn't really have anything else to it for me.
Yeah, I enjoy the art style. I think it's interesting, just this weird world they're creating. And, well, like I said, I only paid $8 for the whole bundle, so I can't really complain about it. So
no, you can't.
I would say get the Humble Bundle and try it.
Well, it's over now. But
oh,
if
is
you got it?
Is it?
Yeah, it's over.
Oh, shit. Yeah. I thought it was still going on. Oh, well.
They'll have one in like another week or so.
Sucks for you guys. So, the other thing I played is Virtua Fighter 5 Final Showdown.
So you have PSN Plus?
No, I bought it.
Oh, why? You could have just bought PSN Plus and got 850 other games.
Because I also wanted the costumes, and I wanted to keep my game.
Well, you could, for $50, you could have got an entire year of PSN Plus.
Well, the thing is, I'm still not really that excited about PSN Plus. Even the games I get there for free, a lot of those I have already played. Or I'm not really that interested in playing, even for free. So
okay. It's not free if you're paying $50 for it.
Yeah.
But. Well, it pays for itself. I mean, unlike Xbox Live, where I think if you can't
Where you pay to access the stuff that's free everywhere else.
Yeah.
Or pay to access stuff that you're already paying for.
We always have to get into this discussion.
Yeah, because it's such a raw deal.
It's tiresome. Anyway, the thing is, I am a gamer who gets games pretty much very early or within 3 to 5 months when they are out. So by the time something comes out for PlayStation Plus, I probably already have played it if I was interested in the game.
Fair enough.
So anyway, Virtua Fighter 5 Final Showdown. It's a pretty good fighting game. Everyone should pretty much know by now that Virtua Fighter 5 is kind of 3D fighting game perfection. It's deep, but not actually that hard to learn, if I have to be honest. I think the systems are easier than the ones in Tekken, for example. I can never figure out how really the throw system in Tekken works. It's not really that obvious compared to the one, at least in Virtua Fighter 5 Final Showdown. Because if you have played Virtua Fighter 5 when it came out on 360 or PS3, the game has changed a lot since then. It's basically the second complete revision of the game. The game speed is different. It feels a lot faster since the last time I played it. I played vanilla on PS3 back when the PS3 launched here in Europe. And lots of move changes. Moves have been completely removed and new ones have been added. Others have just been changed. The animation system has been reworked so that low attacks really look low and stuff like that. So it's really obvious to see from which attack is coming at you. The animations just look, I think, better in general. Also, at least the PS3 version actually looks better than way back when it came out, I think. And like I said, the throw system has been completely reworked and is now pretty easy to handle how to do throw escapes and stuff like that. The only thing you get basically for $15, you get the complete package of the game, kind of. At least if you just want to play, if you want to have all the crazy customization, then you have to pay per character you can buy packs. Basically what I did, I knew that I wanted to play around with that because it's kind of part of the fun for me, come up with my crazy fighter online. So I just bought on PS3, there's this complete edition for, I think, $25, which is actually cheaper than getting all of it on the 360, so I would recommend getting that instead.
That's not too bad. It could be $60 and then extra stuff on top of that.
Even with the stuff, it's still pretty cheap. Could have sold this, like Capcom does it, for as a $40-$50 game easily. But they didn't. So it's kind of cool. And the online actually works really well. So no complaints there as well. I'm really surprised how well the whole package is. That's how good the whole package is. So I can only recommend playing it.
Okay.
Any questions?
Honestly, I just kind of don't know what to talk about.
People,
yeah, we kind of, if Adrian was still around, we could have him. He's like, but yeah, I just kind of zoned out during most of that.
Not that
I have anything wrong with them. It's just really not my scene.
The other thing I played is Dragon's Dogma.
How is that? Because apparently you're one of the few people in the world who have.
The thing is, I basically bought it because Summer Draught is starting, so I thought, well, let's give it a shot. The 8-4 guys liked it, so maybe I
How's that J-pop on the menu?
What did you say?
The J-pop on the menu.
It's awesome. I'm genuinely excited every time I boot up the game. Because I love how cheesy that song is. It's amazing.
It could have been worse. It could have been dubstep.
It's almost as.
But this
good
is it. It's the stuff that, like, when you hear it, it's like so bad. It's really good.
Yeah.
Whereas dubstep is just dubstep. It's not.
It's almost as good as the Street Fighter 4 song. Well, Dragon's Dogma, it's an interesting game. I didn't really enjoy the demo, but now that I'm playing the full game, I'm liking it way more, because you can actually experience the whole thing, I guess, it's one of those games that just doesn't demo well. I guess it's the curse of the RPG. The thing is, I mostly like it because I can see the Monster Hunter DNA in it.
Yeah, and I think some people were upset because they could have just been like that HD Monster Hunter, which is what everybody's kind of been clamoring for this generation.
I mean, it's not just fighting against big monsters, but it is definitely part of the game. I mean, you can even climb on those things, which is kind of cool. And if you... Well, let's first explain the system. I really enjoy the vocation system, which would probably be easily explained as a job system in Final Fantasy terms. You basically can start out mage, a fighter, or strider, and that basically gives you... it tells you which weapons you can use and what skills you can use. If you're a fighter, you use a sword and a shield. If you are a strider, you use a bow and daggers. And you have, of course, specific abilities that goes with that class or vocation in this game. And what's interesting is that during the game, you earn discipline points when you level up. And you can then at, I think, level 10 is when you can do that the first time. And then after that, at any time, if you have enough points, you can change your vocation to anything. If you were a fighter before, you can become a mage. Or you can mix classes. You can be a mixture of a fighter and a strider, and then that's an assassin. Or you can, from a fighter, you can go to a warrior. And then you can level up not even your character, but you can also level within the vocation, which unlocks more skills. What do you want to ask?
Oh, no, I was going to ask, but you kind of answered. I was asking if, like if you change your vocation at like level 10 or whatever, would it change all your stats? Or could you kind of have like a mashup where like, your guy's an archer, but he has some type of melee abilities as well?
Yeah, you can change. And the interesting thing is that there are base skills that you can get, and they carry over to other classes. So that's pretty interesting. So that means you can, if you're a fighter at a specific vocation level, you can get an ability that lets you carry more stuff, basically. So then you can change to other vocation, to one that is probably weaker, and then you can still have that ability active, and then you can basically still carry more stuff around, which is kind of interesting. And for me, I have gone from fighter to warrior because I really wanted the Monster Hunter feel, and the warrior uses huge two-handed weapons, and then the game really kind of plays like Monster Hunter, which is fun. And the pawn system is also interesting. I mean, I still think the game would have benefited from co-op. It really would have. But the pawn system is also interesting, that you create your own little helper with his own vocation, and you can tell which skills he or she can learn, and then basically other people can basically borrow your pawn, use him or her, and then you get benefit from that, which is interesting. The pawn then can learn how specific monsters gain quest knowledge, which is really cool. If for example, I was at one quest which had a labyrinth-like structure in the dungeon, but the pawns I borrowed from someone else already did that quest, and they said, oh, I know the way, just follow me. That was pretty cool, actually. But the game also has some problems. It's really fun. The combat system is cool. It's fun. It's interesting. But like I said, co-op would have been great. And the world is kind of empty. Not much is happening despite you running around. There are once in a while a few monsters. But mainly you're just running to quests.
Is there a fast travel?
And there is no fast
travel. Yeah, I was that kind of confused me. Why would you, like, it's a standard thing nowadays.
Yeah, it's really shitty that the game has no fast travel. Sometimes, and because of the day-night cycle, you basically don't want to be out at night for the most part, because it gets really dark, and you basically have to use lantern, which uses up oil, and at night there are more difficult monsters around. And if you don't want to be disturbed while going to another quest, you don't want to be out at night. So basically, most of the time it's like, okay, let's go to the tavern, sleep till the morning, and now let's go to the same part where, let's say, I've been to the Witchwood probably 3 or 4 different times, but every time I have to walk there, because after one quest I have to go back, get rid of my loot, or sell loot, or store it at the tavern if I've gotten any cool materials, and then sleep there, and then walk back there for the next quest. So that's kind of shitty. They really should have had a fast travel in there. They have one form of fast travel, which is you can buy waystones, but they only get you from wherever you are in the world back to the main city. So basically back to the main hub.
So, but it doesn't work in reverse. So like if you are like say 30 minutes from the main town, you'd have to walk back there after you went to the main town.
No. You buy the waystones, and they always get you to the main town.
Yeah, but I'm saying, can you go backwards? Like, if you're in the, if you buy a waystone, can you buy one from the main city back to where you were?
And it's a one-time use item.
Oh no! And apparently they're expensive as well, aren't they?
Expensive. It's like, yeah, 10 gold. And at this point in the game, I have like 300k, I think. So it's kind of expensive if you think about it. If you go back every time you've done a quest. Not really convenient, to be honest.
No, it doesn't sound like it.
If at least they had made it like a one-time purchase, or what, a thing that you get from a quest, and then you could use it as often as you want. But it would have been way better. At least then I could get back to the main town anytime I want, but this is a lot.
And this is it. It's if they're trying to get you to walk about the world, they could at least put something in it. I mean, Red Dead Redemption was is a good example of that. They have these random things that kept going off that kept you interested while you're roaming the world.
This
you know,
really have it. I mean, there's I think one or two random things that can happen. I mean, a griffin has attacked me one time, or a dragon, but that's basically the highlight. That big monster can just show up and attack your group, but it's not really something interesting that's happening. And you can explore the world, but going into a dungeon really doesn't do you any favor if you don't have a quest there, because at some points it doesn't seem like you can progress in the dungeon until you have a quest that basically triggers everything to work in the dungeon.
Right.
That's what. experimenting with that, but yeah.
I realize that it's an old school technique, but you would think at some point they would find some way around that. Xenoblade does a good job where like the areas you can't access are just kind of covered in high level monsters who would kill you in one hit anyhow. Mm-hmm. That's more sensible than saying like, oh yeah, some guy triggered a quest back in town, now everything kind of opened up for you.
Yeah, yeah, but otherwise I think it's a pretty fun game. I'm actually surprised how much I'm enjoying it despite those flaws. But of course, if you are someone who... It's basically like if you're already really pissed off at in MMORPGs, at walking around from the quest town and to your quest and back again, then this game will do the same thing for you.
To me, Dragon Dogma, from what you're saying and from reviews and comments, sounds like it was a great B-tier title that is like a AAA budget. Because there's no way that game is going to recoup what they put into it.
Capcom has put so much resources into this title, it's kind of ridiculous.
And it's a shame, because it sounds like the game's got something like really good about it, just it's not quite there.
Yeah, and it sounds like one of those things that would be ironed out in a sequel, but yeah. Honestly, I don't see how Capcom can greenlight. I mean, the only way I can see it is like they have this engine already built, and they can probably do a game in like a year, because this is Capcom, and they could probably have it on launch.
They have looked at Elder Scrolls as kind of an example of what Western players like in an RPG. But they have not quite gotten all of it.
Yeah, and even then, Elder Scrolls is a game that has evolved.
Or how dungeons work, stuff like that. It's not really something... It's something they probably should have gotten right the first time around, to be honest.
I think there's a lot of, you know, like it sounds like they got the basics right. They would just kind of mission some stuff that would kind of tie it all together to be an amazing experience.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, there's a lot of games that kind of start off with rough foundations, but they, you know, you kind of shape it and mold it. And Assassin's Creed is the perfect example of this generation.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's true. But at least they've gotten, unlike Elder Scrolls, from Combat Room. So, and I think that's.
And that's a huge thing. It's one of the reasons I've never played the Elder Scrolls. I still don't get how people ignore that part of the games.
Yeah, and the combat is really fun, and I really enjoy mixing up different pawns, seeing how they work on different enemies, and trying new tactics on enemies. Like I really enjoy when you fight these, I think they are cyclops or something, you can basically crawl on the back and then hit them in the back, and at some point you will bend over and then you can hit it on the head. It's like these typical Japanese tactics in games which work in an open world role playing game, and that's pretty cool, I think. So it's an interesting game. I don't know if I would totally recommend it at full price. I bought it at full price, but I would probably not recommend it.
Well, based on NPD sales, I'd be surprised if it's not like $20 by the end of the summer. So
at that price, I think it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm Capcom, and, you know, this is something we'll get into later, I wouldn't be opposed to porting it over to the Wii U, at least to try to recoup some of our budget on a third platform or a PC version or something.
And maybe fix some of the stuff that people have complained about.
Yeah, you have the time for it.
Yeah.
So, we shall see. I'm going to jump ahead of Daniel real quick, just because I want to talk about this. I don't want to say I've been saying it, but I've been experiencing Heavy Rain.
Experiencing is the right word, I think.
It's an interesting concept. It's different. It's novel. It's, you know, it's intriguing. I'm trying to avoid saying any word that makes it sound like it's a great game, but it's not a bad thing. It's just that it's not much of a game. It's kind of like an interactive novel.
Let me ask you the following. Does it make you more or less excited for Beyond?
I am not excited for Beyond yet, because... This is the same problem I have with a lot of these cinematic games, is that I do not like games that take me out of control. And just being, you know, like Heavy Rain for the most part is just like I can walk around and various things I get to interact with, and then I get a very fancy QTE or several QTEs. And, you know, like that's novel, but I can't play for extended periods of time because it just doesn't hold my interest. And I know a lot of people are going to say it's for the story, like how how's the story grabbing you and stuff like that. And it has some, you know, it has different themes that we don't really see examined in video games. I mean, like there aren't many video games I can think of where you take a shower, where you brush your teeth, where you use the bathroom. But then you also think, like, there's a reason many of those activities aren't in your normal video games. They just aren't that fun.
The thing for me is I always compare these games to, like I did with the Walking Dead game, to the Japanese visual novels, which I think are an interesting idea. I just don't like the presentation of them because it's just lots of reading, and I still don't think reading is something I should do in a video game.
I don't mind it if it's kept to a minimum, but Heavy Rain does have voice acting,
so,
and
yeah,
I would prefer if it didn't.
And basically, Heavy Rain or The Walking Dead game are like the Western version of these visual novels. They're basically really visual in the sense that you are watching it and hearing all the stuff and have some input in the story.
Yeah. I mean...
Which can be enjoyable, but you have to know what you're getting into.
Yeah, like I said, it's an enjoyable experience. I mean, my favorite part of the game so far, I'm only about... I don't even know how far. Maybe 4 hours in or so. My favorite part so far has been like the car chase, like the first major challenge that the Origami Kid gives your main character. And it's different because I think one of the problems, a lot of games that aren't really driving centric have is like car controls are just awful.
Yeah.
GTA's guilty of this. Saints Row's improved. I think also Saints Row kind of has the arcadey feel, so it works for that. True Crimes, if you remember that game, also had the same problem, where it's just not as... And some of the James Bond games, where it's just not as fun to drive because you don't really feel like you're doing much. You're just kind of hitting the side of the road every so often and hoping for the best.
Yeah.
But the one that they did it in Heavy Rain, it actually felt like, you know, like you don't have direct control over it. You're basically, it's kind of like you're on rails and you get various inputs, like do you go left, do you go right? And you have like a, you know, like you have a time window to make your decision and stuff like that. But it really does work out and it does give you a sense of tension because you kind of think like, am I going to screw up? Like I have to be focused and attentive this entire time. Granted, it seems like it's one of those things where like you can feel quick time events, but it seems like the game does compensate for you. Because I asked a friend after I finished it, and he's like, you pretty much would have got the same results no matter what.
Wait, if you don't hit the quick time events?
No. I screwed up on the driving at some point, and I ended up... Well, it's a 2-year-old game, I think I can spoil it. I ended up flipping the car, and you have to get out the recording or whatever. So I don't...
Now I know what he means. Well, at some points it changes little things, but sometimes failing at stuff in the quick time events can change things drastically in the game.
Oh yeah, some of them can. Like for example, one of the earlier ones. And so far my favorite character to play as is the detective, because he seems to be the guy who's like every time he has a scene, it's like he's actually in danger of dying. It's the first time you meet him, he's kind of talking to the PI, I should say. He's talking to like the hooker in her hotel room, and you get into a fight with her ex-boyfriend or one of her ex-clients or something like that. And I know for a fact you can feel that one because that's one of the first fights that's one of the things in the demo. And I actually ended up doing well this time around. And then she starts talking to you, and you get more information for later on in the game, I assume.
Yeah, and you can actually do die in some of those, but the game still continues.
Yeah.
Basically just lose the character.
Yeah, he was talking, you know, there's one, I think, I'm not really sure her role. Oh, I guess she kind of met up with the guy now. But Madison Page, the one who has like that dream where she's being mugged. Like, I'm not surprised, but I told you can die during that dream. Didn't, but, yeah, so, I assume that wouldn't drastically change the game that much.
It would change quite a bit.
Does it really?
Yeah, because you don't get all the information and the ending can work
in
different ways.
I meant for that one in particular, with her dying in her dreams.
What do you mean? Changing, then?
Yeah,
I guess she died.
Because nothing happens in her dreams that's really relevant to the story, as far as I know.
Oh, okay. No, I understand what you mean. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's some stuff that is kind of like, it makes sense, like, this will change the game, and then other stuff is just like, this is nice, but it really doesn't matter if you go one way or another, because it doesn't, okay. I mean, granted, I might have a different opinion when I actually beat the game and, you know, see the bigger picture. But like I said, I'm going to take my time with it just because I honestly can't play for extended periods of time without it losing my interest.
I totally get that. I think I handled the game kind of like a TV series.
Oh, so like...
For an hour, put it down, then got back to it like 2 days later, stuff like that. Like, if I got a DVD box of a TV series.
And that's pretty much how I've been playing it. Like, I get, like, I stop at the start of a new chapter. Not like, exactly at the start of a new chapter, but, like, I'll say 2 or 3 of them. And then, like, they'll usually give you, like, an update. Like, you know, it's, like, Tuesday, and the rain's, like, 1.6 inches or something. And I'm like, okay, I'll stop for here, and then I'll continue tomorrow so I know where the story is and stuff. So it's not, like, halfway through a chapter. And, you know, stuff like that. So it works.
But I think to play it that way is probably even a better experience. Because I think the people who played it like normal games, like 5 hours in one sitting, stuff like that, I think that makes some of the problems the game has more obvious, I think.
Oh, and speaking of problems, the voice acting is horrendous in this game.
Yeah, we don't.
Like, it sounds like, have any of you seen The Room?
I have seen The Room many times. I know all about The Room.
But yes, the main character always reminds you of the main character in The Room.
I know exactly what you mean.
And
I hated the voice work of the detective in this game so much.
Most of the characters are kind of bad. So far, the only one I kind of like is the drug addict. I assume drug addict detective.
Yeah, that's the only one I think that was quite good.
Norman Jaden, yeah. Other than that, I just got to say one more thing. It creeps the hell out of me. The loading screens with the people's faces staring at you.
Oh, especially the PI guy.
Oh my gosh, that is so creepy. I don't know who thought that was a good idea. But I'm like, hurry up and load. I don't want these people staring at me anymore. And I realize I don't like CG human heads. It's just not something I'm accustomed to seeing. It's freaky. Because it's the same, I don't like, Kara, or, you know, Kara, the other Quantic Dream demo. It just blows my mind. I can't look at it too long. I get the heebie-jeebies just thinking about it. Aside from experiencing Heavy Rain, I went back and played some Sonic 2, just because I owned it way too many times, apparently. It's still a fun game, it holds up. I know a lot of people have issues with the Xbox D-pad, and for the most part, it's never really bothered me, because most of the games I use the 2 analogs, and the D-pad usually just like weapon selection, or, you know, just like quick inventory stuff. But using it for a 2D game, I really realized the problem with the Xbox D-pad. I'm playing Sonic 2, and I'm like fighting the controller half the time, because like he won't move the way I want to move, or like I press it and like the buttons just feel really stiff.
The new one is much better. The retractable D-pad.
I'm not paying $60 to play Sonic 2.
Yeah, I don't blame you, but the new one, they actually have fixed it. So if you end up picking up one of those controllers for whatever reason.
Yeah, I wanted to, but it's still $60. My Xbox controller still works, but who knows?
I've asked about it holding up, because I still remember the Sonic games very fondly from the Genesis, and especially Sonic CD, and I was one of those guys who was really excited for Sonic CD to come out, and I bought it immediately. I played 2 levels, and then I never touched it again. Because I don't know what it is. These Sonic games just don't work for me these days anymore. I can still go back to Super Mario Bros. And it still totally works. But Sonic?
I think this is going to be a problem we'll see after the end of this generation in a couple of years. Is that there are games, I think, that are kind of a product of their time. Where, like, platformers have kind of gone beyond with the Sonic mode, which is kind of like, Sonic is cool, but it's mostly about speed. There is some platforming, but if you stop and actually try to platform in Sonic, doesn't control that greatly.
Yeah, that's what I mean. As soon as you lose speed in Sonic, the game kind of isn't fun.
Not only that, is the levels are designed around you fucking up a lot.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So, and it's not exactly the most trial by error, but it is kind of like you memorization, because in order to, you know, play a Sonic game well, you have to know the best path and, you know, like, to keep your speed going and stuff like that. And that's something that comes through playing a level multiple times and stuff like that. I still enjoy them, but I'm not going to say like, Sonic 2 is the greatest game of all time. Well, actually, that's not true. I think it was one of my top five games of all time. I enjoy the game. I really do. I really do love it. It's, you know, it's a throwback to simpler times, and I don't want to spank one of those old people. Back in my days, you know, games were just about fast hedgehogs moving across the screen.
I'm older than you, so.
Yeah, I think that's the difference between Sonic and Mario, is that Mario was always kind of built on this foundation that the core gameplay had to be fun. I don't necessarily think Super Mario Brothers holds up as well, but it's also a very, you know, it's like the first game. But like 3 and World and all that other stuff holds up, and I would say some of them hold up better than some of the newer Mario Brothers games.
As someone who just recently played Super Mario Bros., I think it still holds up very well.
I think it holds up, but I think it's still a good game, but it's outclassed by its sequels big time.
Well, of course. If I have to choose my favorite Mario game, it would still be Super Mario Bros. 3.
Yeah, as I was about to say, I don't think anybody would ever say that they prefer Super Mario Bros. Over Mario Bros. 3 or Mario World. It's still a good game, but like some of the basics were, it's kind of like Sonic 1 in the same regards, where I can't play Sonic 1 because he doesn't have the spin dash, and that's so vital to the franchise that it's really hard to go back and play it without it. And Mario
Bros. 1, I could say at this point, unplayable.
And also, since Martin doesn't have this, but I've been playing I played the 3DS demo of Lego Batman 2 DC Universe Heroes or DC Super Heroes, something like that. One, I was actually surprised by the fact that this game has voice acting, because I think it's the first Lego game with voice acting.
Yep. And do you know why?
No, why?
They did focus testing.
And people wanted the Lego.
And older player liked the ambiguous, silly talk voice thing, but little kids were like, I don't know what's going on.
That is kind of funny.
So, now you have voice acting.
It's not bad. They don't take themselves too seriously, so that's always good. I mean, like you can have, yeah, and this is kind of the same thing with Lego City Story on the cover, but it's kind of like a parody of sorts, where they kind of, I mean, the Lego games kind of have that sense of humor, but now it's being played up in voice acting as well. It's fun, but it's still a Lego game. They're not the most complex games in the world. It's kind of interesting, because the first level, I assume this is the first level, you have Penguin, Joker, Ridja, and I think Two-Face, and like it's like a 30-minute demo. You end up having a boss battle with all of them in that time. So I'm kind of curious to see what the rest of the game is like, because it is a team-up with, like, Superman and the other DC heroes and stuff like that. But if Batman's doing away with all the villains in, like, the first act, like, what's the threat big enough for them to bring in Superman and all that stuff?
I watched the E3 demo of the 360 version, and, dude, they have General Zod in it.
Oh, nice. It does seem to retain a sense of humor. I've seen the trailer, and there's, like, a part where Superman has Batman by the cape, and he's fighting him, and Batman's like, I hate traveling like this. And then Superman just takes him and throws him up against the moon, and he goes, you know, the Batman pose with the cape and stuff across the moon. Then he falls back down, and Superman grabs him again. He's like, I hate you. So it does seem to retain that sense of humor. It's a ton of fun. Like I said, the Lego games aren't the type of game you kind of go in looking for to try. It's not Demon's Souls.
Also, we should probably mention that the handheld versions don't have the open world aspect that the console versions have.
Well, that makes sense, I suppose.
Yeah. Wait, is there a Vita version as well?
There is a Vita version, but it's identical to the 3DS one, which I don't personally get.
Yeah, that's kind of strange. I honestly, I mean, because there is a Wii version, they could have ported over that one as well or something. Like, there's enough console versions for them to have ported it over to the Vita with no problem. But, yeah, that's a ton of fun.
But from what I understand, you still get full experience with the handheld, because where it's open world, but you still go into levels, and these levels are basically in the handheld versions.
Yeah. So that could work out better, because sometimes you just don't want to do the open world stuff, because... Like you said, like Dragon Dogma, for example, is like you can have an open world, but if it's barren, it's boring.
And it really depends on how interesting the open world will be.
Yeah, like I honestly don't know what they're gonna like. I imagine if you can fly around a Superman or drive the Batmobile, it might be fun for like 30 minutes, but I don't really know if you're doing an open world DC game, and I'm sure people are going to mention like Arkham City or Arkham Asylum, which aren't really, I mean, Arkham City is close to an open world game, but Arkham Asylum is really close off.
You wouldn't consider Metroid Prime being an open world game, so
yeah,
Arkham Asylum, I wouldn't call that open world either.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like I said, a case could probably be made for Arkham Asylum, but even then, it's a very small city compared to some other open world games.
Yeah,
like that would be like a corner in GTA 4.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'll probably pick it up when it's cheaper. Even though like, games tend to hold their value for the most part because they do, you know, it comes out now and then they're going to probably get a boost later on in the year around Christmas when parents pick this stuff up for their kids.
Yeah.
So
I'm definitely interested in it, but I would probably prefer the console version, I guess. Which also looks pretty nice, to be honest.
Yeah. The problem is, and I could be mistaken, is I don't think the console version has a demo yet.
Nah, that doesn't look like it, no.
Yeah, so I did the 3DS because Nintendo announced it, like, oh, it's available on the eShop now, and I'm like, oh, okay, I go and download this with all the trailers for their 3DS games and stuff like that. So why not? So yeah, that's what I've been doing. What have you been playing, Daniel?
I have been playing, because I bought the Humble Indie Bundle as well. I loaded up Amnesia, played it for 10 minutes. No, I'm not playing this game ever again.
Is it that scary?
It's very creepy. What I'm going to do is I'm going to cheat and I'm going to get my friend who is really scared of scary games, who plays them anyway, I'm going to get him to play it. So that would be interesting.
Oh, Daniel, what should I say? I played through the whole thing. I basically had to force myself because I've wrote my bachelor thesis about the game, so oh boy. I can tell you it's really hard at times to push yourself forward. It's super creepy. But I'm really excited for the new one at the same time.
Yeah, I'm gonna get my friend to finish the first Amnesia for me before the second one comes out. I'm going to buy the second one and make him play through that as well. So that's going to be interesting. I've been playing a bit of Bastion. I don't think it's as good as everybody says it is.
I think the best part of Bastion is the presentation.
I would agree with that.
And stuff like that.
Yeah. I think the gameplay often like 2 hours.
And I don't like the level design. I don't like the enemy design.
Yep.
The controls aren't that great, especially on PC. So
I didn't have a problem with
it. The music is fantastic, and the art is fantastic.
The presentation of the whole thing is really good. It's the gameplay, and I don't mind the gameplay, but I don't think it's anything spectacularly special.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you there. I actually think that buying the Humble Indie Bundle was worth it for Bastion's soundtrack alone, let alone the game itself. other than that, I've been playing the beta for Smite, which is basically what happens if we put the camera behind your character in League of Legends, and it turns out it doesn't work out very well.
I thought there already was a game like that.
Well, there are games like that already. Avoid the problem by... Well, Monday Night Combat, for example, avoids the problems that Smite has by giving everybody guns. And, because the problem that Smite has is depth perception, and the extreme lack of depth perception will get you killed a lot. Mm. And, I mean,
Think this would be a game where you would benefit from 3D?
I don't, which is why, see, I love Monday Night Combat, I love it, and it's because they've basically put the camera behind a character in League of Legends, and they said, oh, this doesn't work out too well, so what we'll do is we'll shift the camera to the right a little bit, and we'll give everybody guns, so that way, and they've streamlined the gameplay a little bit, and they've made it really quick. So that way, you don't really get frustrated as much, and you don't have the problem where, oh, I couldn't tell whether I was going to hit them or not, because your guns have near on infinite range. They just have very aggressive damage drop-off, so they do less damage at longer ranges. Whereas with Smite, if you are a ranged character, you cannot tell how far your attack is going to go, and it's really frustrating. And there are times where you get attacked by a tower, and it tells you you're getting attacked by a tower, but you can't really tell. There's no other way other than that to know, and you can't really keep track of your health very well, because there's loads of other stuff going on. There's just too much going on, and the depth of session just ruins the entire game for me. So I think, like, because League of Legends is top-down RTS sort of thing, and it works because, obviously, you get lines drawn where your abilities are going to go. You can accurately see how far your attack is going to go, because you're seeing it all. And you can also keep an eye on the map really easily, because you just click on the minimap, and there you go, you're viewing that section of the map, whereas you can't do that at all in Smite, because you have to stay behind your character, because otherwise, well, that's going to break the entire game. So I don't think it's that great. I mean, obviously, it's in closed beta, so they're going to fix it. I hope to God they don't do the monetization system that they've done in Tribes Ascend. It's made by the same people, and they probably will, because it's not very good. It's grindy. It favours people who pay money. And obviously, that's not how you should really be doing a free-to-play game. Other than that, there's not really anything. I'm waiting on Torchlight 2. Where is that? Come on.
I think that's going to be the motto of our summer. I'm waiting on. Honestly, I think the next game I'm buying is New Super Mario Bros. 2 in August, and then the next console game I'm looking forward to is Borderlands in December.
Same here for Borderlands.
So,
I guess for me it will be Darksiders 2 and Kingdom Hearts.
I might look into Kingdom Hearts just because it is a long summer, and I do. I've always been interested in the series, but I didn't have access always to a PS2.
Don't bother with the story, by the way.
As I say, that's the other thing I hear about is like,
don't bother. just let it wash over you and enjoy the gameplay. I played the first two Kingdom Hearts. I have no fucking clue what's going on.
That's what it already says. It's like, gets really confusing after the second one, and there's been like, what, 5 spin-offs to tie in the events. So
I tried reading a summary of what's going on. I still don't understand it.
I think they said Kingdom Hearts 3D comes like a video package that tries to explain the story to you.
Well, that would be interesting.
I bet it will probably still not be clear what's going on.
I think that's the problem with having an overarching narrative, is that it does tend to get in the way more often than not, as we
It's because of the inherent Japanese-ness.
Oh yeah, that too, but I mean, I think
because
just...
Nomura can't tell a story for shit!
I think each individual game has a decent story, I'm all on board. Well, honestly, I don't even care. It's not that big of a deal.
It's not important. It's really not important.
The only time I think a story is a deal break for me is if it's front and center and it falls apart. Like, if you're a story-centric game and your story sucks, and this is the problem I had with Mass Effect 2, then it's drawn attention. But like, honestly, if you just have like a basic save the world story, I don't care.
Kingdom Hearts is purely enjoyable also on just the mechanics and the Disney fan service.
Which is pretty much what I'm getting.
Yeah.
But I guess we can go over to news, because this is going to take us like an hour to get through. There's so much to talk about this week. but yeah, I guess we can start off with... Well, let's start off with the stuff that's probably a no-brainer, but Neversoft is apparently now working on Call of Duty. Whether this means they're working on a new Call of Duty or they're just working on Call of Duty, like half of Activision...
The link I saw for the jobs, it says something like, support Activision's Call of Duty. Sounds so, more like they are probably like just one of the half dozen teams working on Modern Warfare 4 or whatever the next Infinity Ward game is going to be.
Then that does beg the question, though, and I'm sure it's not something new question, but if the Call of Duty bubble ever bursts and like Activision has invested half of their their studios into it, what happens?
They are going to have to actually make some new games. I mean, by some, I mean more than one as well.
But it's not even that. But if you have so many people kind of like it's like putting all your eggs in one basket.
Well,
if
exactly
that basket falls, and
I will guarantee you that they will close Raven.
Yeah, they probably will.
They already sized them down.
They've gotten
just
it.
As part of the studio. Yeah. So if that ever goes away, they are done.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting if that bubble ever bursts, and I do think it will burst when we kind of go into the next gen. I don't necessarily mean that it's going to go away, but I can see it not selling 20 million. Yeah. So yeah, that will be interesting. Jason Rubin has been appointed president of THQ. I don't know if you folks talked about this last week.
No, we didn't.
Okay.
Just E3.
Well, I mean, that was the other thing. It kind of came out at E3, and because of that, there was a lot of under-the-table stuff, like him closing down THQ San Francisco and kind of announcing it during E3, so it kind of got buried underneath everything else.
Yeah.
Then recently we've had comments, even though, and this speaks to my problem with video game press sometimes, is we had the thing with him quote-unquote calling Saints Row the third embarrassing, and then it turned out that it was the interviewee who called it embarrassing. He kind of agreed and said that he expects better things. You know, he wants to kind of repurpose Volition to do.
He was also kind of misquoted, I think.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's kind of dumb news. I kind of expect good things out of Jason Rubin. I think he's one of the good guys. He has been great at other companies before, so
yeah. And I think, I mean, it's a very tough job. I mean, I don't think anybody expects it to be an easy task.
He was a developer. He was a developer at one point, so I think he's someone who gets it.
Yeah,
who gets games. So I wouldn't expect it to be like, oh no, you guys, all you've been doing with Saints Row is totally wrong.
Yeah.
Your game has all been the best selling.
Yeah, Jason Rubin is not dumb enough to say, this is wrong, it sold 4 million copies.
Yeah.
I am more kind of embarrassed that, like, I understand it to a degree, but the fact that some game interviewee had to say, like, I'm embarrassed to play this game in front of my... Like, there are other games I'm much more embarrassed to play in front of people.
God of War comes to mind. It's pretty self-aware of its stupid shit.
Yeah. And that's I think that's the problem. And I've seen a lot of people kind of agree with this. It's like, but Saints Row is meant to be embarrassing. It never tries to take itself seriously. It's going for the whole parody thing. And because gamers aren't accustomed to that, it's like, oh, I don't want this. Give me GTA. You know, it's gritty, it's dark, it's mature. This is the type of stuff I want.
But GTA didn't even start out that way.
No, and that's kind of why I've fallen out of love with GTA, is because it's going in the opposite direction of what fans wanted. Because GTA 3 and Vice City and San Andreas were both because it didn't take itself seriously. Especially Vice City, set in the 80s, you had a bunch of stuff for a generation who probably didn't grow up at the time. And it was awesome. And then GTA 4 came out, and I'm like, this is so boring.
I think Jason Rubin gets it, and when he says stuff like that, I think he means like, we should probably give Volition some more, bit more budget so that they can even get closer to the vision of what Saints Row can be.
Yeah,
and this is because Volition don't ever make bad games. They've never made bad games, as far as I'm aware. And you know, you can argue the quality of Red Faction Armageddon, it wasn't a bad game. It just wasn't what it could have been. That was the problem with it.
I think the other problem, and this is always kind of a problem, and we're all guilty of it, is sometimes it's hard to divorce the gamer from the business side of the industry. He's going to have to make some tough decisions. He's going to have to make cuts. He's going to have to close down studios because THQ is a sinking ship, and it's sinking fast, and he's trying to build it out with a bucket right now. So we're going to see a lot of things we probably won't agree with over the next couple of months coming out of THQ and JCP.
But it would be necessary for THQ to get back on its feet again.
Exactly. And you can know, you know, hopefully he has the business savvy to help them rebuild. And in the future, we'll probably see them be more inventive and stuff like that. I like the fact that they're getting away from licensed titles for the most part. I think the only license they have left is the WWE one.
Well, this is it. Is THQ didn't really have a problem with not being inventive in the first place. Yes, we had the licensed titles, but then we also had really cool things like Company of Heroes and Darksiders and Saints Row and Red Faction. Yeah, and The Blob and stuff. So, you know, it's not a problem that they have. The problem was obviously just them splurging on New Draw and loads
of
other...
They had a lot of novel ideas, but they went about it the wrong way. Like, THQ was a company that was pretty much kind of like B-tier, and they're trying to do AAA titles. Like, when stuff like, you know, what is it? I think UFC had to do $2 million to break even and stuff like that. It just speaks to, like, mismanaging expectations.
Yeah.
And what was the other title? Homefront is another one of those.
Yeah, and I think it's going to get a lot worse before it gets better, the way people are talking. Like, I think it was Peter Molyneux who was saying, like, next gen, a AAA title has to be something that sells between 5 and 7 million units. And even in this gen, I can count on my hands the number of games that have sold 5 to 7 million copies.
It's not that many.
No, especially if you take away... If you take away Nintendo and just focus on the two HD platforms, the number becomes increasingly much smaller.
Yeah.
So yeah, it will be interesting because this boom or bust mentality cannot maintain itself. It doesn't maintain itself, so I'm curious to see what happens there. But all the best to Jason Rubin and THQ. Like Daniel said, they were one of those companies, and it's kind of like Ubisoft in that degree, except Ubisoft's more successful, is that they try new stuff, and not all of it appeals to everybody, but they are going out there and trying different stuff, and it's working for them. So hopefully THQ finds that. Speaking of stuff that's kind of different, Payday the Heist No Mercy crossover.
I don't know if you saw my rant about this on Twitter this morning. Boy, it would have been this morning for me. So, Kotaku completely missed the fact that the trailer for this... So Payday the Heist is like this bank robbery simulator, you could argue, which is kind of... You can tell it's influenced by Left 4 Dead. They admitted it's influenced by Left 4 Dead. And it's a pretty cool game on its own. And then Valve was saying, or somebody was saying, that they're collaborating with Valve on some Left 4 Dead type thing. And everyone was like, oh, this sounds pretty cool, because they made this bank robbery game that was like Left 4 Dead. And then they released the trailer yesterday, day before yesterday, and Kotaku was on it. They were on it, right? This is Valve making a Left 4 Dead prequel, they said. You can go on the site and you can read it yourself, and everybody in the comments going, wow, I can't wait. But if you watch the trailer, right, you can tell it's not Left 4 Dead at all. It doesn't bring up Left 4 Dead until the end of the trailer, where one of the characters goes, you're Left 4 Dead, right? It has Payday's guns. It has Payday's characters. It has Payday's graphics. It has Payday's name. At the end, it says Payday, No Mercy.
Yeah, and it says the developer's Overkill.
Yeah, I know. Everybody missed the fact that this wasn't a Valve project, and then Chet Folizek had to go, oh, no, this isn't us. This is some excited marketing guys. It wasn't even them. It was everybody jumping the gun and saying, I mean, Payday's a pretty cool game, and I'm looking forward to this No Mercy, like, prequel thing. It's just how everybody's blown it out of proportion. They're saying it's a prequel game made by Valve.
One of those things where Valve thought, oh man, these guys are making something cool that we kind of identify with.
Yeah.
Let's let them do something with our IP, basically.
Well, Valve has been doing that for a long time.
Yeah, exactly.
They did it with Gearbox and Half-Life 1, and they've been doing it since...
Team Fortress came out?
The way Valve works is they hire modders a lot of the time, which is a bit different, but in recent times with TF2, since it got the items, they've been saying, you know, we can make items that are sort of related to your game in our game.
I thought Team Fortress was like a Half-Life mod.
Well, yes, but they're nowadays what Valve have been doing is they've been saying you can put our stuff in your games instead of we hire you for making mods.
Oh, yeah.
So Monday Night Combat has a ton of TF2 items in the PC version. There's Half-Life stuff in Defense Grid. There's Half-Life stuff in a load of indie games.
Super Meat Boy, for example. Yeah.
Super Meat Boy has headcrabs and stuff in it. Renegade Ops has the jalopy from Episode 2. And, you know, so Valve have been really good about that. And this is just Valve going, you know, you've got this game which is kind of similar to ours. How about you do a sort of cool little tie-in thing? And everybody's just blown it out of proportion.
I mean, and this kind of translates to what we're going to talk about next. But I've always thought that was something Nintendo should have focused on. It's like they have a lot of staple things associated with them, and I feel like that's always something they could play to the strength of third-party games. They're kind of doing it now with like Tekken Tag Tournament 2 on the Wii U, including like the Magic Mushroom. And
it kind of says it's kind of like breeds friendship between developers, and it means likely to come back and work for them later.
Yeah, and it doesn't. It's not something that's like, oh my gosh, if I get the 360.
In fact, we're already seeing that sort of thing with Platinum.
Well, that's a different type of partnership. I'm talking more like, you know, like that with Tekken. It's like, you know, if you get it on the Wii U, you kind of get like this extra bonus, but it's not something that takes away from the other two versions.
Yeah.
And the same thing with, I mean, it's an exclusive game, so it doesn't matter, but like, Ergo City Undercover has like the Mario pipe and it has the sound effect, which again is a nice homage to Nintendo.
This sort of collaboration stuff only leads to good things, because Hidden Path, which is a small indie company in Seattle, they made a tower defense game called Defense Grid, and then after that, Valve came knocking on their door going, hello, we want you to make our new Counter-Strike game.
Yeah.
So,
it's one of those things where you can discover talent that probably wouldn't have gotten a fair shake, and you never know what comes out of that. But, like I said, we were going to this other point, and this is probably the biggest thing, and it's the same thing that happened at E3, is after E3, we've kind of had a week of reflection and fallout, and the same thing that happened with Nintendo has just happened this year. It's like almost everything that's coming out is in the negative department. And it's, you know, it's, they still have time to fix this. I mean, it's the same thing I've said with the Vita. Nothing's broken until it's actually out, and I still think the Vita has a chance to turn it around. I just wish Sony believed in that. But yeah, we've had some of this stuff I think was just kind of blown out of proportion of stuff that we know, and like a lot of people report on the fact that even though the Wii U supports 2 gamepads, it won't do it at launch, which is something they mentioned at their press conference.
Yeah.
What was the other stuff that came out? Oh, Iwata. One of the things I hate about the gaming industry is the fact that Iwata gave a E3 analyst Q&A, which is about 9 pages on the Nintendo website. And like everybody divvied up that interview however they wanted to make like 50 different articles. So you got a bunch of different information coming out of it. But most of it was, one, is that Nintendo is not willing to fight Microsoft and Sony over exclusives. Which a lot of people have issues with, I think.
I don't have an issue with that at all. It means that Nintendo is doing what they know they can work, because for the most part, Microsoft and Sony are appealing to different people anyway.
It's not even that. I think there are other strategies that work. I mean, we've seen this before with Nintendo, where they had like the Capcom 5, which I assume they paid for, and that ended up being like 3 games, and Resident Evil 4 got ported to the PS2 anyhow. But this, you know, like there are other ways to do it, like Monster Hunter, Dragon Quest IX, and I think some other games. Like they don't pay for exclusivity, but what they will do is help you advertise it. They'll pay for publishing, or they'll bring it to the West for you.
Can I say something?
Yeah.
People should have learned by now that from this generation that third-party exclusives are a thing of the past.
I've said that the entire generation, and people still are kind of... Like, if Microsoft, Sony, or Nintendo are not paying you to keep that game on their system, there's no reason whatsoever to leave money on the table. But people still kind of want that, you know, they want that, they have that mentality, and it's just not... It's not feasible. For Microsoft, it makes more sense to get the day one or exclusive DLC. For Sony, it's bundling, you know, it's bundling extra games or giving them more support or giving them time at their press conference. For Nintendo, it's publishing deals for games that probably would not. Like Dragon Quest IX is, I think, the best-selling Dragon Quest game in the West. Monster Hunter Tri is easily the best-selling monster hunter game in the West, selling over a million copies between Europe and the States. And they're doing that again. They're teaming up with Platinum Games.
Well, this is it. Is Nintendo are actually getting exclusives, whereas Microsoft and Sony are getting exclusive DLC.
Yeah, and I don't think, and I think that's what
And I don't know about you, but I will never buy a console for exclusive DLC.
I'm sure there are people who do. I mean, and there are people who buy, I had a friend on Twitter this week who was like, I'm not going to buy Battlefield Premium. I think it's a ripoff. 3 days later, I bought Battlefield Premium because I just felt left out. You know, I wanted, it's been, like, what is it? I think you get 2 weeks of the maps ahead of time or something like that.
Yeah, then, probably.
Some people are just, it's kind of like that mentality when you're a kid and somebody else gets something, so you have to want something now because somebody else got something new. It's kind of like, oh, these people are paying on new maps. I want those new maps, so I'm going to buy the 360 version so I can get the Call of Duty maps a month in advance so my friend can stop bragging about it. And it's a very terrible mentality, but it works so well. So, yeah, it makes more sense to focus on those strengths instead of out and out trying to buy an exclusive from somebody. And at this point, the exclusives that would matter are too expensive to get. Like, who's going to be able to afford, like, a GTA exclusive or a Final Fantasy exclusive or a Call of Duty exclusive? That's way too much money for Activision, Square, and Take-Two to leave on the table.
Yep.
So, yeah, I think what happens is he's saying smart stuff, but he's saying it in such rapid succession that people, it does kind of come off like, oh, this is Nintendo being Nintendo, they're being cheap again. They said that. The other thing that came out is they said that what they said and what people reported were two different things. What people reported was Nintendo said they aren't going to compete with Xbox Live and PSN. What Iwata said is that it doesn't make sense for them to try to compete with them out of the gate because these are services that are 6-7 years old at this point. So, and Microsoft has sunk billions into Xbox Live. So he's saying
for Nintendo, it's definitely going to be a gradual thing because Nintendo has more. They don't have anything really to lie on at the moment, and whereas Microsoft obviously has an infrastructure that they've built up over, well, since 2003 when it launched, which was 10 years ago now, almost. So it makes sense for Nintendo to say, we're going to add it, we're going to do this over time. And at the moment, who was it that said that the Wii U would support free-to-play? Was that Miyamoto that said that?
I think it was Reggie Aniwada. But yeah, I think it was.
But
right.
You know, it makes sense. But you know, Nintendo is now saying, you know, this is something that you don't currently have in the console space, and we're letting you do it. You know, which makes sense because obviously you don't compete by duplicating functionality. You compete by innovating. Well, it's not really innovation because it's just happening on the PC, but you know, it's innovating in the console space at the moment.
Yeah, I think it's a double-edged sword, and it's a problem they're going to face with launching this system in general, is that there's a lot of stuff that they're behind in, and I don't think anybody's going to disagree that they're behind in online space, and people are just like, they've had 6 and 7 years, they know what Microsoft and Sony's done, they know what works and what doesn't, so they should be able to kind of launch with a similar experience.
But it's not going to work immediately. They need to sort of figure out for sure how they're going to do it because, you know, there's a lot Nintendo needs to sort out. There's, you know, obviously payment systems and whether it's going to be free or not free, you know, whether there's going to be some online chat functionality, what that's going to be, how it's going to work, you know.
Well, I mean, some of that they've kind of detailed with the Miiverse. And again, some, you know, that sounds cool on paper. At least to me, I don't know. I was really just half listening when I listened to you folks last week. Sorry, but I think what came out with that now is that since some of it is going to, most of it's going to be regulated. Like there's going to be the day in between posting and when people can respond to you and stuff like that. So it's kind of like Nintendo, one foot forward, one foot back. But yeah, it's kind of one of those things where no matter what they do, they're going to try to maintain their family-friendly image, and I think that just doesn't always run concurrent with gamers.
Well, all Nintendo really need to do is give us an option, make it on by default, and let us turn it off.
Well, I don't even think I think a lot of what's happening, and this is always the case, and Nintendo's completely to blame for this, is that they are muddying the message. They don't really have a clear, like, this is what we're doing. It's kind of like, this is coming out in an interview, this is coming out in a Q&A, this is coming out here and here, instead of just like sitting down and saying, this is how our online works, this is how our Miiverse worked, and stuff like that. We're getting snippets here and there, and then people are just kind of taking those snippets to the
Remember how Microsoft revealed the new Xbox Live back in 2005? There were basically no questions left after that. They showed everything. Here's your gamer tag. Here is how GameScorer works. This is what Xbox Live Arcade is. Stuff like that. They really just went down the list and showed all that stuff. And at Nintendo, I still don't really have a clear idea what all the things that Wii U can do or can't do.
Well, I was going to say, and this is something that I honestly, at this point, I don't know what game of chess Nintendo's saying. It's not the game that the rest of us are. But it seems to me like their focus is to divvy up the information as much as possible between now and their launch. So they have 4 to 5 months. I assume we're going to get a Nintendo Direct or some type of conference that's focused mostly on NFC stuff. And then we're going to get a press conference or Nintendo Direct that's mostly focused on their online capabilities. Because, I mean, it came out that Pikmin 3 doesn't have any online in it, which I guess is a big deal for a lot of people. I'm still not huge on Pikmin, so it doesn't really bother me. But
the thing is, if you have multiplayer in it, why not also have online multiplayer in it?
Oh, and I get that, but I just meant like I don't get Pikmin in general.
I don't blame you.
A lot of the stuff that they showcased at E3, they didn't mention any online aspects to. Like, we saw that Rayman had online in the trailer, and they didn't mention that at all at the E3. They mentioned Zombie U has, like, an online mode, but it's not online. It's kind of like Demon's Souls, where you can write stuff on, like, you know, like, you can find other survivors who died and stuff like that. But, yeah, I assume that's part. I'm only grasping at straws here, so who knows. I assume that's one of the reasons we didn't see anything about Call of Duty or Madden or anything like that at their press conference, is that they want to focus a show on their online. So there are no questions there. And I think the problem is like they wanted to do that, but everybody's asking them these questions, so they have to answer them, and they give you general vague ideas. Like, we found that friend codes are back, but friend codes are, according to Nintendo, not going to be as intrusive this time around, but we don't know how that's going to work because they haven't detailed it yet.
I'm going to say, I think the way Nintendo is handling this whole thing is absolutely terrible. Absolutely terrible.
I don't think anybody's going to disagree with you on that.
You don't trickle out information of your new console you want to sell this holiday season. You don't.
I'm actually going to disagree with you on that one.
No.
And I'm going to tell you why. Because this is the reverse of what happened with the Vita, where the Vita came out of E3 smelling like roses, and then the more information we got about it, the less enthusiastic people got about the system, where I think Nintendo's trying to keep the momentum going. The problem is
they
need to get it started.
They don't have momentum.
Yes, and I'm agreeing with you.
Everything we are hearing is like, well, this doesn't sound that good.
That's
not great. That's vague. I have no idea what you guys are doing. That's not the way you do it. At least you present something that is substantial in some way.
Well, I think they wanted to focus on the Miiverse for whatever reason, and they wanted to focus on the games at E3. And I think the press conference was a terrible, terrible thing. But on, like I've mentioned this before, on paper, they have a phenomenal launch lineup for the Wii U. it might not interest you, but on paper it's really hard to argue with. When they have sequels to 3 of the best selling games of this generation at launch, they have ports of some of the best, you know, critically acclaimed games of this generation. They have Assassin's Creed and stuff like that, which is coming out around the same time as the current gen, and they have new IPs and like Zombie U and Project P100. So it's a well-rounded launch lineup. It has system sellers, it has, you know, current gen ports, and it has a decent number of titles. It's just that Nintendo lacks that one truly Korea app title for launch right now. And I know it's supposed to be Mario, and Mario will sell well, and it will sell to a lot of people, but I don't think Mario gets people. I don't think 2D Mario gets people excited for a new system, because it doesn't really show what the system's capable of.
It looks like an upscaled Wii game, and it doesn't even seem to have changed much mechanically. it looks almost like the same game.
Yeah, mechanically, what would you change?
Well, they did change from... We talked about last week, they did change some stuff with the 3DS one.
Like what? The 3DS one is the one that confuses me more than anything, to be honest with you. I don't get the gimmick.
I think it looked immediately more interesting than the Wii U title.
Really? I thought the Wii U one was better because of some of the amazing backdrops they have.
No, absolutely not. I think I was immediately intrigued by the idea that it's all about the coins and it can turn like parts of the level into coins and I can turn into Gold Mario and stuff like that. Immediately more interesting to me than
we're on
the same game again.
I saw the gold stuff. I'm like, okay, I don't get it. Like, Mario's always got coins, and then they talk about like, the million coin challenge. I'm like, hey, this just sounds tedious. But
well,
I mean,
not if there's such an abundance of them.
Yeah, that's the point. It's like if he gets extra life for every 100, you're gonna be like swimming in the eyes by the end of, not that you don't already, but it's just really backwards to me. So I mean, we're on two different pages here, but again, it is a, it's, you know, it's like the DS one, 3DS one only has 2-player co-op. This one has 5-player co-op now, or 4.5. I don't really know what you consider the 5th player, and stuff like that. So it will do well, but yeah, they needed that one title to kind of push them forward and say we've entered this new gen. And they lacked that, and I honestly, I get what they're trying to, what they tried to do at E3, but it's not what you do at a launch, it's what you do every year other than that. So yeah, what else came out this week that wasn't that great? Oh, Take-Two is not really supporting them, which isn't surprising, but they're taking a wait-and-see approach with that as well.
I would not be surprised if that most third parties will have a wait and see approach. You will see some titles being ported, but others will be like, well, we probably shouldn't even bother with it. And I can also see third parties being especially hesitant with next gen coming up. I don't know how much resources they want to spend on the Wii U unproven platform at this point, of course.
I just want to point out the irony in that, in saying that like, the system that we know is coming out this year is the unproven one, but people are betting the farm on stuff that's not out for another year and a half.
Yeah, but you have to see it from a third-party standpoint. They know their shit sells on Microsoft and Sony platforms.
Which isn't always necessarily true, which we'll get to in a second with NPDs. I think it's one of those things where because there's more abundance of third party titles on those two platforms, we tend to hear more about the successes. But there are probably a lot more bombs on those because of some of the budgets they put behind them. I mean, we just mentioned THQ, which pretty much lost all their money on the HD systems. But yeah, go on.
And I would also assume it might be a technology thing.
It is going to be a technology thing, and it's one of those, you know, Nintendo, it's a really tough avenue to walk, I think, because from what I'm hearing, I don't know how Microsoft or Sony plans to sell their system for anything under $400, and if you have trouble selling your system for $300 right now, I don't know how raising the price is going to help that situation, and like I said, then they're selling for how much your game has to sell to break a profit goes up, and then it's like this, like I said, this whole mentality is really not very sustainable, but that's what everybody keeps on pushing forward.
Yeah.
So, we shall see. And, I mean, speaking of unsustainable markets, May NPD came out, and I'm assuming none of the companies wanted that to come out. The only shining spot of the month was Diablo 3.
Oh, wait, is that game sold well? I am shocked.
Well, I mean, you would think, but I mean, Take-Two tends to have great selling games, and Max Payne 3 bombed pretty hard.
I have to say, I'm actually surprised about Max Payne.
I'm not. I mean, I don't think Max Payne had much hype behind it. Like, I
thought Rockstar Marketing would turn that around.
I don't know what I honestly don't remember marketing for that game. I know there was commercials and there was ads on sites and stuff like that, but I think it's just like one of those brands that has been in a show decline because each game has sold worse than the past. And it's been, what, 8 years since the last one?
About that, yeah.
So, yeah, I think, I mean, we don't have exact numbers, but we know it sold under 450,000 on two platforms.
Ouch.
Yeah. And that's not, you know, like it seems like Take-Two's kind of, there's the games are selling progressively, yes. I don't know if it's just because of the branding or because people are probably not accustomed. I assume it's just the branding, but yeah, Red Dead Redemption sold well, and L.A. Noire sold just in that, and then Max Payne sold just in that. So hopefully GTA comes out who knows when, and that will help them out. Because Take-Two...
The thing about Max Payne is, though, I think they basically did everything right. I still have to ask myself if maybe it still is the Diablo effect.
It could have been the Diablo effect, but, I mean, that's partially on Take-Two then, because they pushed it out of, what, March? Where it would have probably stood on its own?
Yeah.
And then they pushed it to May, and they released it the same day as Diablo 3.
Yep, exactly.
Not the same month, but the same day. So, yeah. I mean, if anybody, Rockstar should know all about cannibalizing everybody else's sales.
Yeah, exactly. But because if you can sell L.A. Noire the way they sold it, I don't understand why Max Payne 3 didn't sell as well.
Yeah, I honestly don't know. In addition to that, it just wasn't a good month for the industry. 360 sales are down like 41%. PS3 sales are down. Wii sales are pretty much in the tank at this point, but let's be honest, it's been one game, what, I think two major games this year. And one of them was a retail exclusive. Vita sales are, yeah. 3DS.
Vita sales, yeah.
The Vita sales are around 50,000 in its third month on the market.
Jeez.
It's not a good sign. And the next major game for it, we have Gravity Rush this week. And
which is not going to do anything for the Vita.
No, and then I think the next major game is Sound Shape.
Which will also not do anything for Vita.
And then I guess the next major games would be Assassin's Creed Liberation and Black Ops Declassified, one of which we haven't even seen yet.
Oh, jeez. And Assassin's Creed is October.
So, yeah, it's going to... And that's what I'm saying. It's like, this was May. They had Max Payne. They had Dragon Dogma. There's a lot of major releases. The next 3 months are going to look really, really bad for the industry because, like we were talking before the show started, there's not anything really on the up to bat. We have Lego City Batman, Batman 2. We have Darksiders in August. I assume we have Madden in like, late August, early September, and I think that's it for the summer. I could be mistaken.
Yeah, except if you count Kingdom Hearts in.
I'm talking about like, on the console space.
Okay, yeah, then it's probably Darksiders, Madden. Yeah, I think that's basically it.
Yeah, this is going to be January of this year all over again, where like, sales are just going to be at an all-time low. And I think, you know, I was actually surprised. I don't know if you folks mentioned this last week again, but I was surprised that nothing got a price cut at E3.
Oh, no, we didn't mention that. But you have a very good point.
Yep.
Nothing. I mean, the Wii, the 360, the PS3.
And the funny thing is, the Vita didn't get a price cut, but they also didn't announce any bloody games for the damn thing.
They announced Assassin's Creed and Call of Duty.
But they don't count. They don't come out for ages.
Well, Assassin's Creed comes out in October or so. End of October. And yeah, they haven't shown anything of Call of Duty. We just know it exists as a
They announced a new logo. That's it.
Yeah, so it's going to be a rough, rough few months for everybody involved, except for the 3DS, which has Kingdom Hearts, which I think will do well. It has the Rhythm of Final Fantasy. I don't think that's going to do spectacular, but it's something. It has Mario in early August.
Yep.
And then the rest of the year is like Castlevania, Paper Mario, Luigi's Mansion, Epic Mickey. So the 3DS has a ton of games. It should do well. I don't know if it's going to do remarkable, because even sales are still kind of flat for the system, but it's been one of those things where Nintendo hasn't been able to keep. They haven't been able to keep the stream up. They did well at the end of the last year. They did well at the start of this year with Resident Evil Revelations and Kid Icarus. And I don't think anything major's come out since then.
But we have to say that the 3DS is doing incredibly well in Japan.
Yeah, it's tearing up stuff in Japan, but
it's like every week, like 60% of all console sales is 3DS.
What is sad is that the 3DS dropped by half, by 50%, and the Vita doubled like last week's sales this week, and it still ended up. I think it's like a 5-to-1 margin, and this is not going to be a good race. And right now, Sony's not helping the situation.
I don't see it getting better, especially not in Japan. I mean, Sony is not doing anything. Those two games they announced at E3, they will do nothing in Japan.
Yeah,
and I mean, as soon as Monster Hunter 4 comes out, I mean, what is Sony supposed to do?
Yeah, and then we just got word. I mean, it wasn't a major title, but, you know, Dragon Defenders is being axed for the Vita.
Yeah.
Dungeon Defenders.
Yeah.
And the reason is, we can probably use our resources more wisely.
Yeah, and it's not a threatening situation for it. And like you mentioned with Nintendo and the Wii U at E3, Sony did their system no favors by relegating it to a 2-minute thing where it's like one game logo and then a trailer for a game that you take 2 days beforehand. They announced like PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale is going to be on it, but they didn't actually show it off. They just showed you can use the Vita as a controller. Which is cool, but that doesn't help. That sells me on the PS3, and possibly, like, if I'm really, really rich, I can get a $250 controller to play it on, but it's going to be interesting. Dragon Dogma did 92,000 over 2 systems, which is
jeez.
That's painful.
But the thing is, I remember when Capcom announced when the game is coming out, and the moment they said the release date, I was like, this is going to bump so hard.
Yeah, and the sad thing is, I think somebody mentioned it, is that I think Monster Hunter Tri on the Wii
outsold. Better. Yeah.
It's opening month.
Yeah, and they are not bringing that shit over. You fuckers.
We shall see. I honestly don't know. But, I mean, that was something else I don't know if you folks mentioned about E3. Japan was pretty much on vacation.
Yeah.
We had Resident Evil 6, which looks like it might as well be a Western game. We had Nintendo, but Nintendo's always the exception. And we had, I think, Tekken Tag Tournament and Tank were pretty much the representation.
Well, they got 2 minutes for the both of them.
Yeah, so Japan was on vacation, and I don't know because, like, you know, Wii U, Vita, just in general, like, there's really nothing because Microsoft and Nintendo have pulled out at Gamescom, which is in August.
Yep.
They've got nothing to show.
Well, I heard Sony had a ton of games for the Vita at E3. They had something like 25 games on the display or something like that. They just didn't mention it at the conference because they had to spend 20 minutes on Wonderbook.
Sony and Nintendo had previously always a very big presence at Gamescom. I've been a couple of times. And when I last been there, Sony had the biggest booth of them all. They had lots of games to show, lots of games to get people playing. And same for Nintendo. And now they're not going, even with a new system coming out.
Oh, I was going to say, okay.
That's really shitty.
Well, there's two things. One is that, and this kind of goes for all three of them, but mostly Sony, I guess. Sony has a terrible end-of-the-year lineup right now. They don't really have that title. Like, they have, PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale, they have Video Game Planet Karting, and they have Sly 4, and those are, like, their three big holiday titles. Microsoft has Halo 4, which will do well because it's Halo, and that's pretty much it for them. And we've
Forza,
mentioned
Forza to be also figures off.
Yeah, but hasn't that been on the decline?
I'm not sure.
And we've kind of mentioned the Wii U situation where It's, you know, it has a decent launch, but it does, again, lacks that killer app. The other thing I was going to say is Nintendo seems to be going about this differently since they have a launch system, is that instead of doing, I guess instead of doing GamesCon, they're doing a bunch of events across Europe right now. They just had one in Paris, I think. They have one in London this week, and I think they have one in Italy soon. And then they have it set up in the States as well. I'm actually going to one in 2 weeks that they're doing in New York City. And they're doing that over a weekend where you can go and get hands-on with the Wii U and stuff like that. So it looks like they're trying to do that to get it into more people's hands. And then I assume what they're
But the thing is about Gamescom is, wouldn't you want actual consumers to try the thing out and get convinced, and they maybe talk to other people and get word of mouth going?
Well, the Wii U will be at Gamescom. Nintendo won't be.
yeah, well... Okay, semantics. I mean, though.
I know what you mean. I'm just saying. Like, I know Ubisoft already says they're going to have like updated builds of their Wii U titles at GamesCon. But yeah, I completely agree with you. Again, I don't know what Game of Chess Nintendo's playing right now. It's like,
do Nintendo know what Game of Chess they're playing?
They seem to be pretty confused about it.
I am going to say this, and I know how it comes off, but I am pretty sure Nintendo knows what they're doing, or at least they think they know what they're doing in their heads. I don't know if they know how it's coming out to the rest of the world, but I assume Nintendo always seems like they have their strategy in mind and they don't really deviate from it too much. They've never really been a reactionary company to me.
Well,
and in some regards that bites them in the ass, but
except
I think,
when the 3DS thing happens.
Yeah. And even the 3DS, they kind of dragged their feet for as long as possible until they realized that they couldn't do it. And I think most of it was propelled by the fact that they knew the Vita was coming out. And yeah. I think that's what's going to happen. And, you know, they have a window between now and when the other two come out. So if the Wii U doesn't start off hot, they can kind of turn it around by, like, you know, the problem is if you offer a price cut early, it's going to kind of hurt the other two because then people are going to expect that from them as well. But yeah, we shall see. But yeah, I think what they're going to do is they're going to have, I don't know if they had it in Europe, but when they had the GameCube come out, they had what they call Cube Clubs, which were like, you know, events you can go to and get hands-on with the GameCube before it came out.
Well, they had this with the 3DS because I went to one.
Yeah.
They had it with the Wii. And I think to them that makes more sense because they get the control. They're the center of attention. And you get it into more people's hands because even with GamesCon, you can only get the people who are 10 instead of, like, if they go across Europe, they can get it to as many different countries as possible.
That is, of course, if they do such a thing.
Oh, I assume. Like, they did it for the GameCube, and that didn't need any explanation.
I don't remember them doing that here, so.
Oh, okay. They did it. That was the first time I got to play the GameCube. Was one of these, and I got.
I know they did for 3DS, but then it made sense because you need people to actually see the thing for the 3D effect.
Yeah, and they did it with the Wii U. They did it with the Wii as well, and I think they are under that impression that Jane is believing, you know, quote their motto or whatever. And I think they will try to get it into as many people's hands between now and launch as possible. I think they've already said as much, and hopefully they do it. I mean, the events they're mentioning now are cool, but they're kind of underground. Like, I only found out because they emailed the site. I didn't know they had the Europe one until people came back with impressions and stuff like that. So, again, it's partially because it's just out of E3. I assume they want to do this closer to launch. But, yeah. I think that's it. Are we missing anything?
No.
I'm aware of.
Oh, right. The other thing that we have on the show notes, and I don't know if you folks have noticed, but there has been an increase in people complaining about the amount of violence on show at E3.
Oh, right. I completely ignored that.
I don't know. I just think it's just a reflection of the AAA market, to be honest.
And yeah. I think that's the problem, is that that is what is on show and does kind of hit you over the head when you have, I mean, it's basically because we had 4 press conferences in one day and it's all pretty much the same thing. Like, I was watching it on TV and like half of the press conferences were beeped out because there was so much cursing and people getting stabbed in the neck, people getting stabbed in the eyes, people getting stabbed in the foot, people being shotgunned in the head, people getting their heads beat down.
My problem isn't exactly the violence in them. I think I mentioned that also during last week. My problem is more the way it's presented. in the way than when like the Last of Us demo ended with this big shotgun shot in the face of a guy who was begging for his life. And that's like the highlight where everyone is saying like, oh yeah, he shot the guy in the face.
That's
yes.
What freaked me out is when they started cheering for it. Because I mentioned this on Twitter, I was half watching Raw at the same time. And I didn't know if these people were bad guys or not. So, because I mean, I wasn't 100%, I'm still not 100% sure if they're bad guys or if they were just like people who were just rummaging for stuff. And he came across them. Because as far as I know, they didn't attack him first. But
they are, I think, violent guys, but
so is
still,
he.
but still, it's like you are selling this game on the violence at that.
Yeah, and that's the
problem. I can agree with.
And I don't necessarily have a problem with violence. I'm never gonna say that because, like I said, I'm a wrestling fan. It would be so hypocritical of me to say I don't enjoy people beating the crap out of each other. I think the problem is that that's kind of what this entire industry
is. And not only that, it was really monotonous. It was all really the same thing. I mean,
well, that would be something I would say for across not just the violence, but just in general the whole like cinematic experience. Like, oh, you get this quick time event to trigger the rest of the scene and stuff like that. That was just kind of like Uncharted. Tomb Raider had it. Resident Evil had it, even though it had like that weird golf meter stuff. You know, The Last of Us had it. What else was on this phase?
Splinter Cell, Tomb Raider had it.
So, if you think about it, you have a game that's a survival horror, you have one that's an action adventure, you have one that was stealth, and these games shouldn't look alike because they're in four different genres, but they're all pretty much the same exact game now.
Yeah.
So, wow. So yeah, I think that was the thing. The thing that I find weird are people who are like who are defending the violence, like you know, like other industries have it, but you don't see some of blockbusters being violent nonsense. Like I'm not gonna say that they're intelligent movies, all of them, but Transformers, for as dumb as it is, isn't a violent movie. You don't see people getting shot up.
Well, not only this, they don't all look the same.
I guess you haven't seen Battleship. But yeah, I get your point, and I think that's the problem. It's like, and then a lot of people will say, like, oh, but you know, Sony has Journey, Sony has Valor, you know, Microsoft has Castle Crashes and Strosian Man, and
they do, but they don't put those out in the way they do.
And not only that, we want new stuff.
Yeah, and that's the problem. It's like people who are like, those are great examples, and they're fantastic games. But you don't see Journey at Sony's E3 press conference. You don't see Castle Crashes at Microsoft's E3 press conference, even though we did get the Racketeer.
And the thing is, I always wonder, let me get this little rant out here. Everyone always says, like, the main mark, the Joe Sixpack always wants the same shit, wants what he already knows, only wants the violent games. I personally wonder, what if some of these franchises would just stop existing? Would those gamers just stop playing games? What if Sony and Microsoft would put those other games more into the main light? Wouldn't
they
sell more?
And find other stuff.
Yeah, it's a really odd argument because people, I've seen this argument too. It's like, oh, you know, if people didn't want it, they wouldn't buy it. But at the same time, you get this backlash again. If you get a ton of games that aren't found that sell well and people kind of ignore them. Just Dance sells well, Guitar Hero sold well, Rock Band sold well. Sky
Sports Ennis games sell well.
Sports games sell well, Sky Ennis sold well. I'm trying to respectfully ignore Nintendo. just because most of their stuff sells well and it's the probably opposite of what everybody else puts on the show. You know, Sonic sells well. JRPGs used to sell well. Final Fantasy sells well. They aren't violent games.
Yeah.
Mass Effect isn't that extremely violent.
Yeah, you just have to know how to present your game, how to bring it to the players. That's what I think. But most of the time they're like, well, selling a shooter is pretty easy.
Yeah, it is. And because it's like, oh, you know, this looks amazing. And that's, you get people right there. It's not, because it's the same thing. I saw this with the, I said this with the Payday to Heist No Mercy stuff on Gaff. It's like, people are like, oh, this game looks awful. I'm like, really? You folks always complain that AAA games look the same. You get something new and
see,
it doesn't
look
really impressive.
This is it, right? I initially thought that Payday the Heist looked awful, and it's not the most well-presented game ever, but yep. If you play it with a couple of friends, it's good fun.
Exactly, and I think that's the problem, is that we're so focused sometimes on how a game looks that that's why first-person shooters are the best genre to showcase.
Well, I wouldn't even say that. It's not always just the looks. It is sometimes how it's presented.
Oh, I'm not saying...
Sometimes I can understand that it's difficult to sell someone, let's say, what's a more complex game? Let's say XCOM, the new strategy XCOM. It's difficult to sell someone this game. It's not obvious just from showing a short trailer how this game works and why it's interesting to play.
Yeah,
the shooter is easy to sell in that way.
Yeah,
you point at stuff and shoot. And it looks pretty.
I think we mentioned this earlier. RPGs are a fine example of that. They're a terrible genre to sell. They don't demo well. They don't show well in trailers. And even having playable demos sometimes, like, I remember Darksiders had to have like an hour and a half long demo for people to get it. And even then, it didn't sell remarkably well. But shooters, you move a gun, you shoot something, it dies, you're sold.
Can sell in like a 5 to 10 minute demo.
Yeah. And the thing is, and this is also the problem, though, is like the more complex the shooter gets, the more confusing it gets. Like, what was that one? Singularity, I think, is one that's really confusing for a lot of people.
Brink. Brink was confusing for a lot of people.
I thought Bulletstorm demoed awful.
Well, they could have just easily have given you 2 levels and it would have been a much better demo, but...
But yeah, it's but you see, and I understand that, but at the same time, it's a terrible excuse to say, like, oh, we should, you know, like, oh, we can't really market this, so we're just going to do a shooter. And that's how it is. Like I said, I'm not opposed to violence.
But
the
thing that I wanted to show is, do we need 10 minutes for Call of Duty?
Maybe
if you would try to give more to these more interesting games and then just say, well, here's Call of Duty in a montage. It's probably
but this is it, right? They don't have any, Microsoft didn't have anything else. This is it, is one of the criticisms of Microsoft was they didn't have very many video games anyway.
It's more of my general feeling. It just used them because that's the first thing that came to my head. But it's kind of general thing. You can apply it to any E3 in the last few years.
Yeah, but at the same time, and we're all guilty of this, is that if it's something different, we're just going to tear it apart. The racketeer, people tear apart. I mean, partially because it's like...
I'm sorry, no, that's not a very good example.
But what I'm saying, they're showing stuff different. One, the book, another one. Again, that was because of the bad demo, but they do try to show stuff differently.
Which
it's
is
just,
the thing for this little third-person game that Microsoft had from Signal, and the Loco Cycle, or Loco Racer, I can't remember what it's called. We should just see more of that. Like, yeah.
Yeah, show that.
But yeah, I mean, and it's one of those. I also think it's one of the things with the audience where, let's be honest, and I don't want to sound derogatory, but you know, a lot of people are like, "Oh, that's gay, that's so stupid, ugh," and they just kind of it happens. Like, colorful games are for kids, guns are for adults. I think Warren Spector, I can't remember his exact quote. He was like, you know, we kind of use blood and guts, and so that's maturity for the industry or something like that. And that's pretty much what we do, because people are like, this is cool, this is awesome, this is what I want. And
in that sense, I agree with him.
Yeah. And it
I have no problem with violent games, but at some point, you maybe should look at what you're putting out. Maybe you can do some more interesting stuff that doesn't involve this stuff.
This is a criticism I had of, I don't know if you saw the Doctor Who spin-off Torchwood.
I did.
Yeah, so you could obviously tell from the first episode that it was basically trying to be Doctor Who, but more mature, right? And then, and then they just basically made the game about, you know, sex. And I was just like, this isn't mature. Not really. It's an adult theme, but it doesn't make the show mature. And, you know, what I want is I want to see more mature games that aren't just violence, because obviously that's just appealing to a low common denominator.
Yeah. I mean, again, if we were to translate most of the major video games with AAA releases, the video game industry right now kind of represents the summer blockbuster movie mode in theaters. And that's not all movies are. I mean, it's a big part of them, but movies encompass a lot more genres. And right now, video games are only kind of catering to that one niche, that 18 to 35-year-old hyper male who wants
the thing. The thing is, we do have the equivalent of the small intelligent film. It's the indie games.
But this is the thing, they're not massively popular on the consoles.
Exactly.
So.
They are, yeah, that's exactly what I want to say. You would have, you need to play those on the PC. Those would be more represented on consoles than...
So, a couple of years ago, I sold my PS3 and I used the money to build a gaming PC. All of the indie games that I have played and bought since I built my PC, right, have been worth it alone, let alone the third party, let alone the massive AAA titles that I ended up buying on PC instead of console. The indie games were worth it enough. You know, things like Torchlight and Minecraft and, you know,
yeah, and I think, and this speaks to all three, I think, press conferences, especially this year, is that nobody's kind of willing to go for bat for that really quirky idea and showcase it on
the
show.
The Binding of Isaac is the perfect example of an indie game that's fairly mature. I mean, it's a fucked up game. And, you know, Nintendo rejected it flat out, you know? So that must say something. And it's not... It's not the most mature game, obviously, because it's about gore and stuff, but it's not really violent in any way.
It was violent.
It's not really violent. You shoot tears at people, at things, and they explode. It's more going for the sort of a shock factor.
It's
like
cartoony.
You have,
it's cartoony.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's the other thing, is that violence in of itself isn't bad. It's the... Kind
it's
of
the oversaturation of it. And
it's not even the oversaturation. It's again the kind of blood and guts and stuff that's associated with it. Like, I was thinking about this earlier, and a prime example of this is, I'm sure you've all seen The Dark Knight. And the Joker kills a lot of people in that movie.
Yes.
There is never actually a death shown on screen.
Yep.
The pencil trick, you assume... What happens? They never show you what happens.
Yep.
He cuts the dude's throat. You never see what happens. You assume what happens.
Well, this is what movies are about. Is you show them. You don't tell them.
Yeah, and sometimes it's much more. It's a lot more insane of what you picture it to be than what they could ever actually make it to be. I think a good example of this is usually the shaky cam monster movies like Cloverfield, because Cloverfield's an interesting movie until you see the monster.
Well, this is it, and also this is kind of happening in video games as well. You know, the Fallout, not only because BioWare were lazy and they photoshopped a stock picture, but, like, it would just have been so much better had they just not shown you what Tali Zora looked like in the first place. Because that was part of, a large part of the appeal for that character, is you don't know what she looked like.
For some reason, it reminds me of GTA, where I think a lot more people enjoyed it when the main character was quiet. But yes, that...
Well, the best part of Vice City is Tommy Vercetti, if you ask me.
Yeah, I mean, you can have good characters. You can also have good silent characters. I mean, you're a Half-Life fan, you know about that. Yeah. But yes, I mean, this is a debate that can go on and on for days, as it has for, like, the last week. Almost every major website has had an article on it. So, yeah, you can check out, I think, what is it, Eurogamer, Game Informer, 1UP, you know, everybody's had something to say about it. CVG had one, which I thought was really, really just ham-fisted and was never going to be taken seriously.
Ham-fisted is how you describe CVG in one word.
But, yeah, it was like how we need Nintendo now more than ever. I'm like, once I read the title, I'm like, this article, no matter what your intentions are, no matter what you write, with such a title... You're just not going to have anybody read that article and take it seriously at that point. And I think that's one thing that the gaming industry needs to work on. I know they do it on purpose most of the time. Is they really need to work on how to award their article headlines, because a lot of them are just kind of hit baits, where it's just like, oh, we'll just kind of get this really juicy, we'll take a quote out of context and we'll put it as the headline and get people to read it. And then they'll read it and it's like, oh, that's nothing like what I thought it was going to be. But yes, you know, so we'll probably have more on E3 next week, because there's really nothing else to talk about.
There's nothing else to talk about.
You know, you can find us on the website. You can leave us voicemails and emails and other fun stuff. But for Daniel, Martin, and myself, this has been Dual World in episode 72.
See ya.
Strong.